want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standard bred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
At the Races with Steve Wick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Wick.
We're back. Hour three on what's been a kind of a fun and eclectic morning, and a fun third hour is in store. David Hill will join us on the back end, but right now, one of our annual postscripts to Breeders' Cup. You bring in Paul Matisse. It's funny. Paul prefers to come in after the fact and invariably tell you all the mistakes that he made. That's right, Paul? That's the funny part about this discussion.
Yeah, it's true. before we get into that, I know that when they come on your show, it's a big deal. You're a big shot and everything. But when they start naming horses after you, and they don't even need the first name, Darrow, Jeter, Vic,
Liza.
That's when you know you're really made it. You're a real big shot. I knew that they weren't going to name a bad one after you. So when I saw him, I was thinking maybe I'll bet him, and then they just. You're just supposed to tank them, huh?
I didn't. It's Carlo Baccareza. When Carlo was naming all those horses, little this, little Caton, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to name one Little Bic," but he never did. So Joe sent me a text. He says, "Has anybody named a horse after you?" And I said, "No." I said, "Carlo threatened to," and so here. Here it is, and I don't know. I guess
he ran good. It was awesome. Awesome debut.
Yeah, it's really he's the Frankel. He's the Frankel of Penn National.
Right. There's another one, Frankel. There's a good example.
Well, that one was amazing. I mean, that of all the horses,
we've ever had one like that.
Right, for Prince Cali, amazing. Well, Paul, this Breeders' Cup, third time at Keeneland, and what was your we'll do this way. What was your thinking going in? To what to expect and how did you approach?
Well, the Breeders' Cup is such an amazing thing. It's on different levels. But when I first looked at the races, I thought it fell a little flat from a betting perspective when I first looked at it. And then, just like any time you got 14 horse fields and good races, you start trying to make opinions. And, I think I did some things good and some things bad after that, but, we're kind of in a transition. I keep saying that, but we're really in a transition with this Lasix thing until it's completely done. Some of these fields are weak for Breeders' Cup level races, and they looked at going in, and they, for the most part, though, they played out that way. Maybe there were a couple exceptions otherwise, but, it's different. And I just know that I have to get better at the whole thing, since it's not going away and it's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. And if you're betting horses, it's like you're kind of forced into doing it,
Well, and one part of that, I'll just use my own, my own approach to the, to the event over the last 2 weeks leading into the weekend. I did not bring up the, you know, the Lasix topic, not one time. I just said I didn't want people to, you know, to start folding in an uncertainty over which they had no control. And so I didn't bring it up. And so, for instance, you know, when poor Tyler's Tribe comes back, you know, with blood flowing out of his nostrils, you know, a horse that was a very key component to the first race of the 14, it's just like so deflating. And you say to yourself, I mean, not even withstanding what Tim Martin is having to deal with. But you just say to yourself, ugh, now, I mean, how am I supposed to think going forward? And knock on wood, I mean, I know some other horses bled, including, you know, the Japanese horse that nobody's talked about, and Messier as well in a non-Breeders' Cup race. But I, what do you do, Paul? I mean, there's no, you have
no control.
Well,
I think you said it right to begin with. I think you said it right. You kind of have to ignore it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and for the most part, I think it's better without it. You know, it just, it's got to work its way out. And there's, I don't particularly like the back and forth. You know, I think that's the hardest part, you know, because it's not just a switch. Just because it's one way or the other doesn't mean, you know, there's no equation that says, you know, plus three lengths with Lasix, minus three without it.
Yep.
You know, it varies. Horses bleed when they're on Lasix, when they don't, the first time they're off, it just, it's very, you know, a horse like Simplification was a horse that you could be really interested in the race, but in the back of my mind, I always kept thinking, well, he bled in the Preakness, you know, and his form, he ran good last time without Lasix, but that was the first time back from a Lasix, and, you know, it just gets so complicated that, you know, it just kind of makes it a hard task, you know, even harder, you know.
Yep.
But you just kind of... I think the right idea, you have the right approach is, you know, you got to ignore it, but you also have to be cognizant of it so you don't make some huge mistakes, I guess. I mean, that would be that's kind of the way I go about it. But it's just another variable, you know, but it also, I think, affects the quality of the racing. And, you know, because we've gotten to the point where these Breeders' Cup races, you know, everybody wants to run in them, but they don't run a lot during the year. So we weed out into these races. Off a few races, you know, you get some of these fields and you just say, these are the 14 best horses. And, you know, I think over time that's going to change. I think it'll get a little bit better. I think right now, you know, there's other factors too. The trainers having all the horses and, you know,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. But, you know, it just seems to me that field quality overall from top to bottom in some of these fields was, you know, less than what you normally would see at a Breeders' Cup.
There was one thing certainly in evidence on Friday, and I knew, I mean, personally, I was a chicken in a pot after Wonder Wheel won, and I said to myself, now Fort. You know, Fort is going to turn around and win as well. And sure enough, I mean, the two horses that weeks earlier had won the Breeders' Futurity and the Alcibiades, and they come back and they sweep. And I mean, whether it's, and they both won well. It's not like, you know, it's not like they eked out victories. I mean, it's amazing that Wonder Wheel ends up winning more impressively in the Breeders' Cup than she did the Alcibiades.
Well, I do think that was a good factor that happened. And you had the two that you mentioned, but then on the next day you had Caravelle and Malathot both ran at Keeneland and won in the preps, the right preps to run in. And you had Modern Games, who... all that nonsense that he couldn't run back in short time. And then you had Tuesday, who we've heard all this nonsense about, you can't run in the Ark and the Breeders' Cup. That was a good thing. A lot of the horses that won kind of put that, some of that nonsense to bed. But back to the two-year-olds, you know, Wonder Wheel was hard for me to have. Not that I was surprised that she won, just that you knew she wasn't going to get the lead. And she was going to have to win without it. You knew she was good enough. You know, it just, as it turned out, the way they bet the race, and if you're going to get 6-1, well, that's a little different story, you know, but when you're, yeah. when you're handicapping initially and you think that, well, the horse who won the prep is going to be the favorite, you know, and she's not going to get the lead this time. She's going to have to do something different than normal. You know, your general tendency is to go against her. So that was kind of my problem in that race. Not that I threw Wonder Wheel out. And I ended up hitting that late pick five because I didn't. And I made a pretty good move there not to get too caught up in it. But the thing that I was disappointed in myself more, and to what you were alluding to earlier, is the Fort with the silent E there, Fort E. When he ran in that race, my initial impression was he's going to beat Cave Rock. When I watched it visually, I said that, you know, when he won the race at Keeneland, like you said, he was so impressive that day. And he ran against a real good horse, and he, you know, it was battle tested, and the race was pretty fast. And I did something I don't normally do, but I got caught up in the Breeders' Cup stuff, listening to, you know, things that I probably shouldn't have. And, oh, he got a good pace set up. He's not going to run back. And it just kind of screwed me up more than it should have. And I think if that's what you did and you went with Ford, I commend you, because that was good handicapping.
No, not at all. It was the other way around. I actually thought the other way, which was, you know, people had been elevating that effort of Loggins, and one of the things that I somehow let get into my head was that some of the decision making that Pletcher had with Fort, you know, involved, you know, how well he was doing, and that something wasn't, you know, something was amiss, and then he wins this race, you know, coming in, and I don't know. I just kept shunting him.
I'm with you. I did the same thing. I kind of let the outside factors influence me instead of what the initial reactions that we had when you were watching it is that Fort and Loggins were good horses, and they were really running in that race,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you should have taken into effect. And not that I didn't use them or anything. I mean, it was easy to. But if I had been more assertive, A, I could have made a score in the race. You know, we paid, what, $11, $12. And I would have hit the horizontal stuff beautifully because I had luckily landed on the right horses in the Tweedrope turf races. So
we'll talk about Victoria Road in a second, beating Silver Knot and on that side of things. But on the front end, let's fold in a couple of other elements. And when it came to Wonder Wheel, there were two enormous mutuals sandwiched around Raging Sea. And you know, one thing that's been lost in all of this, in addition to the fabulous ride by Gaffleone to win on Wonder Wheel, Flavian Pratt rode Raging Sea quite well from the extreme post, basically from, you know, I think the 13, because there was one scratch. So that got Raging Sea from the 14 hole to the 13 and was a good third in here. But Leave No Trace, Phil Serpy, absolutely thrilled with her effort. And, you know, she basically attended the pace and that we identified as sort of a collapse pace. And yet she's able to stay on and, you know, secure second. And then Sabra Tough, who I used as a reverse tri-key horse. Paul, I thought I had two clever ideas on the 2 days. Sabra Tough here at 63-1. And then on Saturday, Malavath in the mile at 50-something-1. All I needed either one to do is be third, you know, for just a very nice, you know, either would have been fabulous scores. And I just couldn't get either of them to, you know.
You got a little unlucky on the Sabra Tough one for sure. She, you know, she didn't get the best of breaks or trips. And,
same with Malavath. Same with Malavath.
Ran okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't do a great job on those type of horses, but I did have Mel. That was kind of my crazy one in that race as well. But
yeah,
you know, on the I did want to mention on those 2 year old turf race. I know we don't have a lot of time to move along, but
sure.
On the 2 year old turf races, I did have some thoughts on both races. I I think that Shug's horse is a really nice filly there, the one that ran second.
Pleasant Passage.
Pleasant Passage, yeah. I was under the feeling that most of the two-year-old fillies in New York and Saratoga on the turf were pretty good. I know people were saying that they weren't, but I thought they were pretty talented, and I think that Pleasant Passage kind of proved it in that race, and wouldn't be surprised if she progresses, especially the way she ran. And also that it doesn't surprise me that the fillies ran faster than the colts and on the day, except for the fact it's a little tricky. The colt race was a weird pace. So I would just say to anybody that liked anybody in the colt race, almost all of them were staying on at the end. You know, it's a weird thing about paces. Sometimes you think that closers win, that necessarily that means that the pace fell apart, and it's much more complicated than that. And when you watch that race closely, there were a lot of horses who maybe gave you the appearance that they didn't run that good, who actually did. They were running really good at the end of the race. That race is a tricky race, and I wouldn't be surprised if you had an opinion going in. Don't get swayed just because you might not have finished. I mean, there was horses that were finishing 10th and 11th and 12th in that race that didn't run bad. So I just wanted to point that out.
Well, the top pair, one thing should be said. I mean, the top pair were, what, 2-plus lengths clear of Nagarok and the rest. Nagarok, Mostache, Battle of Normandy.
Yeah, they were probably the best horses anyway, but they got the best trips. And they got the best rides, you know. So, but they had good posts, and you knew it was going to. There was a good chance of that going in. So,
well, similarly, Paul, and you know, we'll use the two turf sprints Friday and Saturday. We'll discuss them as an entry. But of the dirt 2-year olds, male and female, who coming out of those races are going to be the best 3-year olds.
You know, on the converse side there, the two-year-old fillies don't appear to have shown anything special yet. So I don't know about the horses coming out of this race. Like you said, I thought they both got good rides, the Leave No Trace and Raging Sea, and they did, you know, they fared admirably. But that whole, as a group, nobody has distinguished themselves, and I don't think anybody did in that race. So I'd be more curious to see what happens later on, maybe even something like with the Damoiselle, where you got an idea that how good Nest was last year. I wouldn't be shocked if something like that happens, or maybe something on the West Coast even, because I don't think that group is all that tough. On the Colts side, they're running fast, the Colts.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I don't think that Cave Rock is one that's going to keep going on. I think Baffert's even alluded to that. He kind of tipped me off on that. That's why I was a little more upset myself, even though he'd run monster figures and looked pretty good in all the starts. I get the feeling he's not going to go forward, and I would be against him going forward. His other 2-year-old, I'm not sure. You know, that's one thing I don't like about having the trainers having all the good horses. I think that National Treasure wants to go to the lead, but they never would have him go to the lead because he's got the same 2 horses. So it's hard to judge him, you know. Yeah. I think he's run pretty good in both starts against Cave Rock, but I think he's running out of his element a little bit. So
that's interesting.
It wouldn't be shocking to me if he runs a huge race somewhere. And for the, you know, my gut feeling is telling me that he improved before everybody else, you know, and all the people that are on Loggins is that he'll beat him down the road. I can't argue with that. I think Fort is a really good horse. I mean, I think for 2-year-olds, those are really good horses that have run. But, you know, as far as going forward, the weird thing is he's run fast enough already where he could.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
I mean, if he just runs the race he ran on Tuesday, Simplification ran fourth in the Derby. I'd take him over him tomorrow if they ran. And, he might be a favorite if he ran against Rich Strike, you know, next week. So, I mean, he's run fast enough as it is, you know, to be in it. So but I just don't, if he does get better, he's going to be really tough. But I'm not sure he's going to. He may be one of those that have gotten better already.
Well, you alluded to Baffert's Saturday two-year-old. What about those two-year-olds, the Brad Cox Spendthrift, Steve Landers product, that giant mischief that beat Arabian Lion? The two of them were 18 lengths ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, and they ran fast, and
yep,
they were impressive, without a doubt. Another two-year-olds that have run good. There's a lot of hope in this two-year-old crop. I mean, horses that are running good races, and you know, a lot of breeding that speed and fast. We'll just have to see if they can stretch out, you know. But they definitely very talented, both of those.
And then Arabian Night, of course, starts out the Saturday action. Let's put together the two turf sprints. You alluded to Caravelle, and of course, from a betting standpoint, this was not an easy horse to embrace, just assuming that, you know, Golden Pal would at least, you know, be part of the pace. Even if you were against Golden Pal, I don't think you're gravitating to Caravelle. And then fold in also the late running, the collapsing juvenile race that Mischief Magic wins, you know, the whole Breeders' Cup wasn't 2 minutes old, and Appleby already had a win.
Well, I thought that race was pretty formful. That I think it was pretty obvious the way that the race shaped up with all those speeds being on the outside, that was going to be a race that could definitely fall apart. So it wasn't shocking that it did. I think probably you landed on one of the horses that ran 1, 2, 3 if you thought that. Unfortunately for me, I like the horse who ran third, and all I needed him was second. But and if he ever won, it would have been real good. But and he ran good. I wasn't disappointed in how he ran. The other two horses got better rides probably, which was another thing that happened a lot. As you know, I'm not a big jockey guy or basher, but the European jockeys really, really outrode the American jockeys, just in general. And that was in display on that race because the tourists that ran 1-2 got great rides.
Then talk about Caravelle and how this
I'm with you on
out.
Caravelle. Caravelle was a very, very hard horse to... I'm happy she won for the reasons why we said before, and it was a filly beating the boys. I don't know how you could envision, even if you know, like I said, going in, I didn't like Golden Pal's races since he got back from England. And I was looking for something in that race to beat her and to beat him. And I don't know, it was just too tough for me, except the fact that it was a spread race, probably, if you were playing any kind of horizontals. It was a good race to poke and hope and use a lot of them, you know. I mean, I'm not saying to use alls all the time, but if there ever was an all race, that could be that could have been one, you know. So anybody who did, and anybody who did got paid on that early pick five on a relatively formful, I mean, extremely formful, the other four races.
I want to bring something up, Paul, because you know, Rick Hammerly is big on the all button as well, and said that if, you know, even if you are all button shy, this is not a bad place to utilize it. Well, all you have to do on that topic is look at the first three Saturday Breeders' Cup races, and here's what transpired. First of all, Goodnight Olive wins the filly and mare sprint. And as far as I was concerned, there were the two Mots and there was Goodnight Olive. Those were the three that were going to get you through that race. Then there's this 14 horse agglomeration, and then Cody's Wish. And granted, it wins by a head over Cyberknife. But, I mean, Cody's Wish is a 2-to-1 favorite. And the 50-cent pick 3. So let's say 3 by 14 by even if it was just 1. If you went Cody's Wish, if you singled Cody's Wish, for every horse you wanted to add to Cody's Wish, it would have been $21 for 50 cents. It paid $1,591. With an right?
The all players got paid, that's for sure.
Unbelievable. With the two favorites. Yep. With two favorites,
yeah,
on either end.
All around it. Yep. That whole sequence there, they in all of them, there was a pick 4, there was a pick 5, there was, I think it was a couple pick 5s even. If you were, and it was, like you said, if you were going to do it in any race, that would have been the race to do it in. So.
Unbelievable.
Almost all the other races were manageable. Unfortunately for me, I needed Cyberknife.
Wow.
I did have an all with Cyberknife.
Wow.
And,
wow.
More so, I wasn't against Cody's Wish. I just like Cyberknife.
So did I.
I thought he ran great. I think it was a. In fact, I think that both those. I think most of those horses in that race, the top finishers anyway, all ran really well. I think that was a pretty good. I mean, the Breeders' Cup Mile, probably because that's what we're breeding nowadays. But every year, it seems like it's always a good race. Everybody wants to get rid of it, but it's always a good race. But I thought Cyberknife ran incredibly well.
Yes,
and I think Cody's Wish proved, without a shadow of doubt now, if there's any skeptics going in, that he's a really nice horse. I think the most amazing thing, well, I mean, besides the incredible story about Cody's Wish, the most amazing thing about him on a racing level is that how without Lasix, he's run better. Which probably is more of an indication that just that he's improved, that he didn't, instead of, oh, he didn't need the Lasix, that he just kept getting better. But there are lots of examples that have Cody's Wishes form up until the point where they don't run Lasix and they just go the other way. And he's one of the rare exceptions where he just went, you know, right through. And Mott's had a couple of them. So that leads me to believe that of all the, that's an angle that I'm going to keep in mind as we learn these things. I'm going to give Mott the benefit of the doubt when he comes off Lasix. Where a lot of these horses, I'm skeptical that they're going to keep going on. He's kind of proven to me that the Lasix doesn't mean anything. So I'm going to, and I'm going to use that going forward.
Interesting.
Particularly with Bill Mott.
Interesting. Well, then you get the confounding scenario like you have, frankly, with the Pipeline. I mean, Pipeline wins that allowance with Lasix with a 104 buyer. Then the Monmouth Cup second with Lasix, then comes off of it for the forego and runs another triple-digit buyer, and then here he's following it up without, and you know, basically, he ran, actually. I haven't heard anything about him, but he ran like he bled, frankly.
Oh, I would assume he did. And there's lots of examples like him. That's what I was alluding to earlier,
yeah.
That you know, you have these horses where that for the first time they run okay without it, but it just seems like maybe they bled and it got left over and they ran so good. And you know, it's certainly not a science, and it's not a perfect science. And I can't imagine, it's got to be just a nightmare for some of these trainers to keep track of it all and try to manage it all, try to prevent it and everything. It's got to be very hard.
Turn to the pick 6 now, and the last 6 of the day on Saturday. And I there were so many. I was just delighted. I saw a bunch of people, usually the posting of tickets. I very frequently roll my eyes. Only rarely do you see somebody say, oh, look at this. I absolutely botched this ticket. I'm an idiot. Tuesday, Elite Power, Modern Games, Malathat, Rebels Romance, and Flightline. Now, the argument could be made that this pick 6, which paid just under $3,000 for a buck, flight line could be argued as a single approach, and modern games could be argued potentially as a single approach. So to some degree, you could have approached this sequence or and the pick five partially as well, because obviously modern games was the second leg of the late pick five and flight line the anchor leg, that you could actually approach this and smaller players had a real fighting chance in here, Paul, because, you know, Tuesday to me was very much a key. Elite Power, I wasn't in love with, but I understood the appeal. Malathat, you know, it was Malathat, Clairiere, and Nest with a little society, and Mike Welch, who picked Blue Stripe like a genius. And then Rebels, Romance, and Warlike Goddess, to me, were the only two you needed in the turf. So this ended up being actually a very manageable late sequence that even small players had a fighting chance.
Power of big fields.
Yep.
You know, even singles in big fields, like modern games or flight line. Flight line's a little bit different, but modern games, even a single in a 14 horse field is a killer. It's a great thing. You know, if you can do those things, you know, you can make those things happen and you get those payoffs. That's one thing that we don't see on an everyday racing scale anymore. You know, the singles are usually in five horse fields. So, or, you know, we don't have these kind of fields on a normal basis. So we don't get the chance, you know, even a horse like Rebels Romance, who I particularly didn't like, but,
why not?
You know, I got a little bit influenced on what he was running against. And not that I had any opinion in the race. That's what I mean. So even if you're going to use him, there was about six or seven in the race you couldn't use. So, you know, that becomes, though, a manageable race, you know, when you have those other singles. So your point's well taken. Back to Tuesday, as far as a winner, I thought that one of the problems with a lot of the European racing, I don't know if you thought this, but that I had was that it seemed like it rained every day for the whole season over
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Every race you watch was on a soft turf. You know, soft turf form in Europe is not that easy to translate here, you know. So, but with that being said, I thought the race was Nashua or Tuesday. I just couldn't get a feel and narrow down, you know, which one was better or which one I should have gone with or whatever, that sort of thing. But, you know, anybody who played that race seriously, that was an easy try or super to have, you know. I mean, the keys were Tuesday or Nashua, and the two horses that ran in there in between were very happy.
In Italian,
ridiculous price.
Right? In Italian, you knew. I mean, you knew she was going to be.
She was going to get the lead.
I mean,
it doesn't matter if she can get that far. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, very, very Breeders' Cup manageable type of race where I'm sure there's people out there that scored on that try or super.
What did? How did you approach the sprint?
You know, that was like the Golden Pal in a sense, is that Jackie's Warrior was a horse that when I opened up the paper, I wanted to bet against and couldn't find anything to play against him. I didn't make a bet in the race, believe it or not, on the actual race. And Elite Power, though, with what you said, I would have had a hard time getting to. I wasn't, I mean, I guess on a massive spread, but I didn't like him. And because, you know, more modern racing stuff, he'd come out of that weird Vosburgh race that was slow, but it was sandwiched between two turf races. And figure-wise, I didn't know what to make of it. And that was his last race was his first race without Lasix. So it appeared as if he had moved backwards off of Lasix. Even though he won easy, he didn't run anywhere near as fast. And it was just a hard race to go by. But anybody who did, I could see why. I just didn't think he was a lot of value at 5-1. Probably there were some people out there thinking he was a good price, but I just didn't see it that way. The only thing I will say is there wasn't a lot you could come up with in that race. You know, I had some bad trips on CZ Rocket, and I know a lot of people that are in my camp that needed CZ Rocket.
Nick Tamaro
had trips on him.
Nick Tamaro was
yeah.
Nick said
yeah,
be
I know,
sure
I know
to use him.
Quite a few people that do.
Yep.
But I guess, you know, and I think that was probably a good play in the long scheme of things because the race was so weak. I probably didn't think that through, and I probably should have played him. But it's easier to say that after it's all over.
The late pick four, we already touched on Modern Games, who just is that good. I've been very ambivalent about him, frankly, all year. Sid Fernando helped our audience with Sherrill's Spite, explained all the reasons why he was going to run an A race. And you know, much like we brought up with the two-year-olds on Friday, winning at Keeneland, the same is true on that sand-based turf course. I can tell you that if Lee Einsiedler is and Bill Mott are running Casa Creed next year, you're not going to see Casa, for instance, running again at Keeneland. He's now 0-4, and arguably his four worst performances are on that turf course. But here's Sherrill Spite, who arguably might have won this race if they run it 100 times, and you know, a horse that came to Keeneland and had won. I mean, this is really a turf course that if your turf horse likes it, they like it a lot. And you know, give us a before I ask you about Flight Line in you know the pantheon of great horses, run through the late pick four.
Well, I think you nailed that. Mile race. I, for some reason, I was against Ken Ross. I kind of messed me up there, and I only kind of played tries. And like you said earlier, with Malov, I think I would have hit the Malov ran third. Yeah. I would have hit that try. Yeah. I would have made a good score there. But Sherrill Spite, everything you said, agreed. That race was the first race where the winds picked up. So I would going forward, anybody who was wide or anybody who was speed without cover, I would give a little extra help to. There was a lot of horses in that race that had no chance the way the race ran. Regal Glory is probably the most obvious one. Had no chance at all the way the race went. I didn't particularly like her as setup going in, but just how the race played out. So I think that it was a pretty hot pace, especially when you consider the wind. It might be a little bit faster than what maybe you thought, and if you give the horses that were on the lead extra points if they do come back. You know, the wind really picked up for the Distaff, and I think most people are going to say I was wrong in this race, but the more I thought about it, and I've thought long and hard about it, that I'm right. I made a huge 6 over the 1-2 exact and try. In fact, in the BCBC, I think I had it for like 400 or 500 to try 6 with 1-2. And I think there are scenarios where that race would have run 6-2-1 if it was run a little differently, just a little bit differently. And if I read, I don't know what he was thinking in that race. That was arguably the worst ride of the weekend. Could be one of the worst rides in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, what made him go on a 5-wide blow pop into the wind when you got Society and Search Results already dueling? I have no idea what he was thinking about there. And I think if he had just ridden better, I believe that Nest is the best horse in that race going in, and I still believe it going out. Most people will probably say that I was proven wrong, but I don't think so. I think they run that race 9 out of 10 times Nest is going to win. It just was a scenario that made her lose.
Interesting.
She's going to run back, right?
Oh, yeah.
Next year? I think she's going to prove it over time. Like you had mentioned, Blue Stripe was a horse that I liked a lot, and I thought that was the right horse for second. I had Big Exact to 6-2. And unfortunately, that was one of those races where my big opinion was turned out to be wrong and everything else was perfect. So that's how it goes. That's racing. But I think I made a good play in the long run. That was my biggest bet of the Breeders' Cup was that race. And I think most of the time I would have gotten it. And even if I was, I think that would have been enough to carry me for lots of Breeders' Cups. If it had run 6-1-2 or 6-2-1, it would have been, you know, a huge score for me. So yeah. I'm not disappointed in what I did there. The turf is an interesting race in the fact that it didn't look like a good race going in, but then it ran pretty fast. And I just wonder if it had something to do with the wind. But I think people should stop knocking more like Goddess. She didn't get a bad trip per se, but she's a really good mare.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think under different circumstances, she might have even been able to win. The horse who ran second got a perfect trip. And Rebel's Romance came with this huge run that I don't know exactly how he did it, but... you know, and I don't know if he would repeat it. Maybe just better than what I thought. Maybe it's just better than everybody thought. And we'll probably get to see that too over time. But Mishriff was a little unlucky. I guess he's retired, so it doesn't matter. But probably not a mile and a half horse. But I thought he ran okay, and
he
didn't get the best of trips. You know, so anybody who had any opinion there on those horses there was probably right. I just thought it was a little surprising that Rebel's Romance ran that good and that the race was so fast. But my guess is it was better than I thought the race was, but the time is still too fast. You know, I mean, it's just, it had to be somewhat wind affected.
Paul, we're getting tight flight line. And what was your thought going in, and where does he rank for you historically coming out?
Well, I was going to give you the, you know, there was so much hyperbole going around. I was going to give you after the race. I was going to, you probably want more technical answer than this, but I was going to say that he grew wings at the half mile pole and turned into Pegasus in the stretch, and his mane turned into a rainbow as he crossed the water. I mean, it was a little overdone, all the hyperbole, but with that being said, he's got the fastest six random races, most dominant six random races I've ever seen, probably. You know, I don't want anybody to copycat those six races. I think that's not good for racing. You know, I think there's too much working backwards. We're hearing that term way too much in racing, working backwards to a race. That's not good for the overall racing. It might be good for a trainer, but it's not good for racing. And they work back six race career. So... you know, I'm not suggesting that's the right thing, but you can't take anything away from the horse. He showed up every time, and he ran fast. And the thing that the core of racing is, you know, when you start looking in a historical sense, the core of racing is, you know, how much speed does a horse have, and how much stamina? It's that balance, you know, speed versus stamina, you know, and nowadays, the horses have been bred to be, you know, more speed-oriented. And I think we have the fastest horses in time, you know, but we've sacrificed stamina most of the time. So what we're trying to do is have, you know, fast horses carry their speed, you know. So when Chuck Simon says he's the best modern horse he's ever seen, that's kind of what he means. It's, you know, the horses that are the fastest horse who can carry it, you know, a mile and a quarter.
Right.
And in my eyes, he's the fastest horse I've ever seen that's been able to carry it. I don't think he's invincible by any means. You know, even the final time of this race wasn't that fast. You know, I think a good Breeders' Cup Classic under the circumstances of that day could have come and beat him, could have tagged him if there was a good one in there. There just happened to be no good ones in there. So, you know, it's, the worst part to me is that, you know, when I talk about speed and stamina and I say that he is the fastest, you know, there's more to racing than that. Oh, that's the core, but you know, horses have a brain, horses have a heart, you know, and they learn how to run. They will show when the speed and stamina go out the window, like John Henry comes to mind. And they just figure out how to win when it's all said and done, you know. And unfortunately, with a career like Flightline and the way racing is, he never got to prove any of that, you know. My gut feeling is that he was you know, beatable under the right circumstance, but you know, just you'll never know, you know. It's just that's just modern racing, you know. That's the way it is, and It's so hard to compare horses of different eras anyway, but when we have this, you know, this change in the breed and the change in the way horses run, you know, I know the Secretary of People are annoying, but in their defense, if it was 1974 and there was a race anywhere in the world for $1 billion and Secretary was going to go to it and be favored, and he probably would win it, you know? So if it was the Melbourne Cup, he would have won. If it was the Ark, he would have won. If it was the Met Mile, he would have won. If it was a three race series over three weeks or 6 weeks, he'd be even more of a favorite, you know? And I don't know. Do we know that with Flightline? We don't know anything, you know? And that's probably, you know, when you hold back to say he's the greatest horse or he's the best horse, or, you know, it's tough to make that when you don't have answers to that, you know? Would Flightline, would he win the Japan Dirt, the Japan Cup Dirt, if he ran 3 weeks from now, you know? He might not be favored, you know? But the best horse ever should be able to win that race, you know? Yeah. If you're going to call him the best horse ever, you know, he should be able to win that race. And I don't know. It's so hard to say that. He's a very talented horse, and like I said before, he's the fastest speed horse that's been able to carry his distance. I mean, he did do it on two tracks that are easy to carry, but that's nitpicking. You know, Del Mar and Keeneland are easy to, probably the easiest tracks to carry in Malincourt. But he did it at the highest age, and you can't take that away from him. So if anybody wants to call him the best horse or the greatest horse they've seen, I don't have any problem with it, because he's, you know, he's in that echelon, you know? He runs fast. But I think it's a little bit overblown. Not that he couldn't do it, but he just, you know, he hasn't really, he didn't prove it Saturday, you know?
He did establish something that people speculated that could potentially make him vulnerable, and that was attending a true serious pace and going on. Yeah, I mean, he's a
fast horse, you know, and can carry it. You know, with that being said, probably if he was going to do it against one horse ever, Life Is Good is probably the best one to do it against.
That's
because
fair.
He's
that's fair.
He couldn't get a mile and a quarter in a, you know, under any circumstances. Very, you know, a great horse, but he can't get a mile and an eighth, really. You know, great speed type horse. So,
but, Paul, there is one part of this that needs to be included, which is that if he was going to prove vulnerable late, somebody from a mid-pack or off-the-pace position needed to stay close enough to reach him, and nobody was close.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And as it turned out, the only one that could have, and basically that's what I thought ahead of time, the only one that, if he did get vulnerable and just didn't totally fall apart, was the one that could broke down. I'm not sure he would have, you know, it's hard to say anything.
Yeah.
After,
yeah.
With Epicenter. But going in, I thought he was the most likely horse to come running. In fact, I don't know how the hell he wouldn't have been second under any circumstances, the way the race ran. But all right, well, it was a great race, and I got to get going.
All right.
But thank you for having me.
No, and this is always a great session. Everybody appreciates
right.
it. Paul, if I don't talk to you, happy Thanksgiving to you and the clan.
Same to you. Yep, thanks, Steve. Yep.
Paul Matisse, bye-bye. Everybody, the one and only. And just, I mean, what can you say? Insights that are always invaluable. It is funny, though, that he prefers to give them after the fact. He years ago, he and Duke would come on, and they would both, give picks. But at some point, Paul said, you know what, I enjoy the postscript more. Well, how about a happy postscript? We've only got about 5 minutes with Dave Hill today. David, I apologize, especially seeing as how you went like 26-0 last week.
Not quite, but I had a good week.
Your best week, right? And after treading water at 500 for 2 weeks in a row, collectively, you now got yourself a healthy cushion for the rest of the second half of the season.
Yeah, I needed that one, I think. Yeah, but we had a good week. I went 10-2-1 in the paper, and one of those losses was really a coin flip that I agonized over before I made it and essentially just picked a side at random and was irritated that I picked the wrong side on that one. But luckily I lost on Monday night. Otherwise, I'd have been killing myself about potential for having a perfect week. But yeah, we did good.
5-1 for our listeners, Houston, Chicago, New England, the Jets, and Tennessee, which was particularly savvy. And, of course, that sets us up for this week. And there was really a lot more I wanted to talk about with you. But considering that some of the election results won't be official till next Thursday, maybe we'll talk about predict it next week. Meanwhile,
sure.
let's get right into it. I actually went through the article already this morning. Give us your prime plays.
It's hard because some of the numbers are moving against me. The numbers are really in flux. There's a lot of injuries this week, and interesting stuff happening with teams that's shaking up the market. So it's tough. I feel nervous. I feel out on a limb on any pick this week, but I like Tennessee again. I think that I got Tennessee at -2. It's already at -2.5. I think you can still get to some places like it looks like PointsBet still has 2. So I like Tennessee at home covering that short spread against Denver. I like the Jaguars on the road in Arrowhead, but they're getting quite a bit. You can find 10 points for them at Pinnacle right now, but a lot of places have 9.5. I think they're going to cover that. I like Vegas, but this is a weird one because, again, there's a lot of rumors swirling around this game and this team, but I think that Vegas can cover 6 here against Colts, who I think are probably the worst team in the NFL right now. And the other game that I like quite a bit is New Orleans in Pittsburgh. I think that Pittsburgh's also, really they've given up over 300 yards in all of their games this season. And I think New Orleans has got to find a game to get right, and I think this is going to be the one.
There's 4. How about the quick survey of the primetime games tonight?
Sure.
Carolina at home.
It's tight tonight. I'm worried about this one. I'm on Carolina tonight. I got 3 points, and I'm not sure if you can find that anywhere right now. You, a couple places offshore, but it's 2.5. I'd still take it at 2.5. I'd like it a little bit less, though. I think it's going to be a close game. But this is, Carolina at home. This is a big game, an important game for them. So I like them tonight. Who's the game Sunday night? What's the primetime game Sunday night? Is it
Chargers?
San Francisco?
Chargers go
yeah.
to San Francisco. And, one of the best stories in the NFL right now is Dicker the kicker signed for the Eagles for 1 week and kicks like 4 field goals and helps them win and then does the same thing for the Chargers last week.
Yeah, but I'm going with the Niners here. I think the Niners are really in all cylinders. And I think Christian McCaffrey has shown that, like, he's filling in the gaps here where they're not missing anything from Debo being out because McCaffrey is catching passes. He's throwing passes. I mean, the guy is just he's a quadruple threat. So, and the Chargers, I think, are just really struggling to figure it out, how they're going to, they're in a tough spot. It's a big number to have to cover, but, my numbers show that San Francisco can just barely get over that hump. It's close. I don't love the game, but my money right now is on the Niners.
Well, and finally, Monday night, the Eagles off of a mini bye, you were willing to give, a pretty bulbous number, 10.5, and it's already up to 11.5.
Yeah. And at 11.5, it's really tough to support. I think that that's too high. But 10.5,
you can live with.
I think they can cover 10.5, but it's starting to get ridiculous. Yeah, if it keeps getting pushed, but you know, this number is being pushed by Washington, just being, you know, just there not being any real support for what this team is doing. But I think that this is a gritty team. So at this point with 11.5, I think, you know, it's dealer's choice. But I picked the Eagles at 10.5, and I felt okay about that.
David Hill, everybody, off of a mammoth week. And you're lucky that we were on short timing. We won't talk about the Breeders' Cup selections. But, Dave, I'll catch up next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Dave Hill, everybody. Dave Hill, 77. And, of course, the New York Times analyst, and I'll send out the link to this week's column. What a fun 3 hours it was at Churchill. We never even got to KK, who's in his office, so he may be hosting the show for you tomorrow. It'll either be KK sitting in the director's chair or a best of, but either way, I'll be back with you on Monday in New York. Thanks to Pat Cummings and Doug Cowens, Eric Hallstrom, Eric Hamelbeck, Joe Besseker, Paul Matisse, and David Hill. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody, and I will talk to you Monday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association.